Did you have some sort of Leslie wet dream about me?
Stop.
Oh my God. Oh my God! You did! You fantasized about me!
Shut up!
Was I good?
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGregor. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we're two dudes drink, talk about movies. Now, this week, we are back talking about movies that are basically the same. This time, we are on Perfect Blue and Black Swan. So we are returning to the world of Perfect Blue because we did this 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was more than three. It was October of 2020, I think. October end of September of 2020.
That's like first year
yeah.
of all of this.
Which, by the way, this isn't Mike. This is the persona of Mike that is the podcaster.
Yes, and every time you hear me talking, it's actually Mila Kunis.
this is the big episode with the big reveal that me and Ross were the same person, just with split personalities and different voices. Right.
Been all the same person this whole time. We've been struggling ballerinas and pop stars this whole time. But before we get into those two, not quite mind fucks, but yeah, but mind fucks, you know.
Kind of mind fucks.
But we got to what we're drinking. So Mike, what do you got?
All right. So I found a liquor store near me that had a lot of options for Japanese beer, like. Actually, like, not just your regular Kirin or Asahi or Sapporo. They had a good selection, and one from Hokkaido Brewing, their lemon lager. Now, I've tried all of them because they sell them in, like, these little single bottles.
Nice.
Which happened to fit perfectly in my Japanese glass.
Yeah, of course they did.
But yeah, these are from Hokkaido Brewing, 5%. This is a lemon lager.
Nice.
So on first sip, it is reminiscent of something like a summer shandy or a porch rocker.
Okay.
You get a little bit more lemon flavor in this, which I found that to be a pretty common thing with their beer. Like, when they have the fruit, you really, like, their melon ale tasted like what I would imagine a melon soda tastes like.
Interesting.
Now, this one does have, like, that distinct, like, beer flavor, which I tried all the ones they had there. The lagers tended to taste more like beer, where the ales tasted almost like a fruit soda.
Huh. Interesting. They're the fun Japanese. They're so fun. You know, they make fun beers, and then they make mindfuck anime movies, you know? But, on the other hand, I just discovered two more beers in my fridge that I had not used from my craft of six-pack, and they kind of pertain to it, but not really. The first one is from Evil Genius Across the River in Pittstown, PA. Stacy's Mom, Citra IPA. It's a very good Citra. It's very smooth. It's 7%, but you can't really taste like the 7%. It's just very, it's a yeah, very smooth.
I like that one from there. I also had their I Love Lamp.
That's a good one. You know, all their names are like, they're pretty funny. This one is like Purple Monkey Dishwasher, I think. It's pretty good too. But 7.5%, pretty good. But of course, that pertains to Black Swan, who has a lovely dance mom. And, yeah, but also recently I've been, and I know I'm a little late to the party, just because I was like, I think I'd heard them in one of their first iterations, but Ice Nine Kills, the band. I think I'd heard them in one of their first like emo iterations. It was like, nope, not for me. And then recently they've turned into like a horror movie heavy metal band. And it's one of their songs I found online that it's a parody of Stacy's Mom, and it's Jason's Mom that they did after the lead singer found Dwayne passed away. And so that song's just like been in my head this whole time. So it goes with that as well. But
I also got to say about these Japanese beers, they have the coolest little tabs. Like, they look like a regular beer cap that you'd either have a twist off or like use a pop off, but they almost have a built in bottle opener where you pull the tap up, it like pops out this little side and then the cap just pops off. It's my favorite version of a bottle cap now.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, it's better than
Japanese
those,
out
like,
there living in 2040.
yeah, they're way ahead of us, you know. It's better than those ones that are like, because I know when you get the bigger bottles of beer from like Amagang, they have the like the twisted kind of cork cap thing where it's got like the metal cage on it that you gotta like untwist and then pull off, and it's just like it's semi-resealable, but it's just really just an annoying way to have a bottle cap on there. But yeah, that one's a pretty good one. It's like a little, it's a pull tab bottle cap. It's pretty fun. But all right, so Mike, Perfect Blue, 1997, done by the same director as our buddy Satoshi Kon is the director. Same guy who did Paprika last week. He is no longer with us. He died in 2010.
It's
But
a shame. He's had some. So he's the creator of Paranoia Agent, which is a great show. Tokyo Godfathers, another great show. I mean, wait, no, Tokyo Godfathers, a great movie, not
was
great
that?
show.
That's a movie. Yeah, Paprika looks like it was his last movie. And he's got some TV show that he did one episode of, but Paprika is his last credited movie. This is actually his first credited movie, so this is his directorial debut, I guess. And it's yeah, it's everything you'd want it to be, and in an anime. And I think I remember saying, because I'm not going to go back and listen to any of our year one shit because it's all unlistenable, you know. And I'm willing to bet we went quite long, because back then we would go average at least 2 hours, I think. So I'm sure we went quite long on Perfect Blue, but it is one of those animes where you're like, you're watching it and you're like, okay, I don't feel like I'm, for at least for me, I don't feel like I'm watching an anime. I feel like I'm watching a horror movie that happens to be animated, you know. It's pretty great.
Which I find a lot of times, like anime movies, if they're not based off of an anime TV show, don't fall into a lot of the tropes that you really don't like with anime.
Yeah, all the ones like Paprika is good. It's the same thing. It's like,
I mean, even
it's.
like most of the Ghibli ones aren't like they don't really feel like they fall into the pitfalls of like anime that people associate with anime.
Yeah. Especially because of the writing and the storytelling. Like, and that's what Perfect Blue is. It's got a great story to it and a great little mystery that happens. But then there's Black Swan in 2010. And Darren Aronofsky has never explicitly said that he ripped off Paprika, or not Paprika, or Perfect Blue for Black Swan, but he did say that the bathtub scene in Perfect Blue he purposely did in Requiem for a Dream. So he ha is aware of this movie, and he has purposely paid homage to it before. But it's very interesting to watch Black Swan and be like, oh, okay, so he cut out the either the actress part or the pop idol part and just kept it as one, you know, performance in a ballerina, you know, preparing for a big ballet role. But yeah, it's the one that got Natalie Portman an Oscar. So she got best leading actress Oscar in that, which, yeah, I could
That's
see.
going into this, I'm going to come out and say, like, with the breakdown and everything, I really like both of these movies.
Yeah. I mean, Black Swan, Black Swan, I enjoyed watching. I was like, okay, this is good. I like the, you know, the drama about it, all the mystery and everything like that. But then it like clicked in my head at one point, because I know the twist. I knew that I'd never seen this movie all the way through, but I knew the twist of the movie. Like, I knew what was going on the whole time. So then when I realized that, like this time, there's a point in the movie where it clicked on me, and I was like, and it's right after she and Mila Kunis have sex, or quote unquote have sex. And I was like, oh, this is like Fight Club, but if Tyler Durden, instead of him fighting himself, he's furiously masturbating.
Yeah.
So then
That's a
you
good point.
start to look at the movie a little differently when that clicks in your head. So I was like, oh, this is fun. This is fun.
Yeah, I guess in Fight Club they have more of like an actual partnership, at least for a while. This,
Yeah, and
it's
then
more
it's
like the evil persona is like, yo, bitch, let's do this shit.
right, exactly. And it's funny because the whole time you're like, okay, like what's going on? Like, is Mila Kunis really like this? Is she really a real person? Like, that's the
Yeah.
real thing. Like, the question is she real at all? Not just like a supporting character in this ballet troupe. And then, of course, she is real, but it's almost as if the movie's trying to play it off as if she could be a figment of her imagination, because there are all of the hallucinations that she
I
does have.
kind of take it more as like Natalie Portman, like sees her as like, oh, the younger model, and is like just hallucinating her more of a threat, kind of.
And that's the thing. And but then the only thing that about this movie that I was kind of like, all right, we either got to do something more with this, or we gotta just cut it all together, is the mother character. Like, she's got to get more over the top, or
She's gotta like die or something.
Kill herself, like kill herself, like for the attention or something. And it's just, it's kind of like, oh,
Or kill
okay.
herself, and then like that breaks Natalie Portman, then you see her at the play
Right,
at the
right.
ballet.
Yeah. And hold on. I'm trying to pull up who she won against. And for some reason it's only bringing up the year before. But I'm getting there, I'm getting there. What the hell is happening here? But so while I'm searching for that, Mike, how are we going to break these two down?
All right, so we are. I'm less gonna do it like a one for one character thing because I think these movies, like the movies, clearly have similar kind of ideas, but execute them in different ways. So I think it's better to look at the ideas and
Okay.
how they're done. So first one is, what do you think is more effective for the quote unquote former idol or former ballet star? Beth getting hit by the car, never dancing again, and basically going and to the hospital and having like a freak out and stuff and being directly usurped by our main character, or Rumi, who kind of latches on to our main character as a memory of how she was as a pop star and tries to take on the persona to recapture that character.
Yeah, she's almost seeing it as a way like back to the spotlight, even though she's very long past any kind of crime that she had. Whereas Winona Ryder is like forced out. She's not trying to get back in. She is forced out. And it's really not by Natalie Portman. It's by what's his name? I always want to call him Vincent D'Onofrio, but then I noticed I was at Vincent Cassell, but I'm just going to call him the Night Fox because that's who he is. He's the Night Fox
Yes.
Motion 12. Yeah,
Man, there will all his most iconic scene ever will always be him doing capybara or capybara, what's it, the
Capoeira.
Brazilian dance.
Capoeira. Yeah. I think it's funny if he was doing capybara because that's just a big rat. So that would be funny if he's just like walking a big rat like through this maze.
They're shaped, so the lasers can't touch them.
That'll be fine.
Right, next, I want to look at the ending for our main characters. I'm not necessarily doing this in the order, but there's two very clearly different endings for the main characters. One gets the freedom from the persona in a positive way. And one gets the freedom from the persona in a not very positive way.
In the sense that death is a freedom from anything, but and well, that is even the question. It's even with Black Swan, it's kind of left up in the air of whether or not she does die from stabbing herself with the glass shard, and then dancing for how long? with this glass shard inside of her. It's basically the entire performance that she
Yeah.
does. And it's only the end when anyone actually notices. But whatever, movie magic.
Next, we're gonna look at what is the more effective way of showing a character going crazy? Her just crumbling under the pressure, or her literally being gaslit into thinking that like she has a split personality?
Yeah, and it's a pretty and I'll say that both movies attempt, well, no, they both succeed in doing the hallucinations and the mystery very well. And the only thing is when you start to actually think about the like the actual the words escaping me, the actual way that things play out in Black Swan in reality.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, there's something off there, but everything in Perfect Blue is happening to Mimi, Mira, Miri, or whatever, Mimaru, and everything is happening to her. So she's going crazy because of this like attack on her
It's
psyche, basically.
external forces causing her to go crazy, where it's internal forces
Right.
going, causing Natalie Portman crazy.
Right, and I think it's more like the mechanics of how things are happening, I guess, you know, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Which brings us to point four, which is the internal versus external consequences of the going crazy. So, what do you think makes for a better psychological horror? The external consequences of her quote unquote pop star persona going around killing people, or the internal, where it's not, she's like, she is changing as a person and seems to be harming herself. But it's unclear if she actually harms anyone besides herself in the movie. But both are psychological thrillers, and both use those tactics very well.
Yeah, and it's the real question is with Black Swan is how much of her hallucinations and her I guess I'll just call it breaks, really. Or maybe even fantasies, because some of it's
Yeah.
fantasies as well. Like how much of it is real? And we do see a decent amount of reality. And what she does, because she does have the scratching on her back, which is probably a nervous, you know, tick or something like that, where that's a place where she can scratch and not have it
Yeah.
see, even though she wears a spaghetti strap top the entire movie. So it's definitely not like a cutting situation where she's trying to hide these things. But there's also the thought of how many times and in what places is she furiously masturbating?
Which brings us to point five. What is the more relatable fantasy? The fantasy of being a like an idol, or the fantasy of sleeping with Mila Kunis?
Yeah,
I'm kidding, that's not an actual category.
it is. I was just saying, it's a pretty easy one right there, because Mila is like fuck you hot in this movie. But the thing is, the funny thing is that both of these movies, the main character's like psyche hinges on a major sexual event. Paprika's is a fictional TV show simulated rape scene. And I mean, not Paprika, Perfect Blues is a simulated rape scene, a gang rape scene in a strip club and a TV show she's filming. And then Natalie Portman's in Black Swan is hallucinating or fantasizing about Mila Kunis. Well, she's actually hallucinating because she thinks she's doing it. And it's a fantasy if you know you're not. Like, you know it's not real, but she thinks
Yeah.
it's real. So it's like a hallucination fantasy, but she is wildly going to town on herself, which is weirdly the point that Vincent Cassell tries to get her to like learn from the beginning. He's basically like, you're to the whole of Black Swan boils down to essentially loosen up by masturbating. That's really all it is. It's not,
Yeah.
it's just like you gotta not be so tense, you know, rub one out, you'll be fine, you know.
The actual fifth category is the both movies have like very different outside factors affecting our main character. In Perfect Blue, we get the stalker, her manager, the obsessed idol who's pretending to be her, and a lot of technology and limelight coming on her because of like a website being just the nature being a idol and trying to move to actor. Where Black Swan, we get the former star who is being scorned, the obsessed dance instructor who's very slimy, the obsessed mother, the younger star who might be coming for her role, but very little limelight pressure.
Yeah, because the whole world, it's not like in Perfect Blue. It's the entirety of Japan, basically, that seems to like be following this girl, and it's almost like it's almost. I don't want to say because she's not as popular as this, but it's almost as if it's like the story of when Beyoncé broke off from Destiny's Child and became her own star. But in this case, the kind of she, Mimaru and Jam or whatever their stupid pop idol name, like band name is, they're not as big as Destiny's Child was. So they're more of like the, if to give like the male boy band equivalent, they're more of like the 98 degrees of everything. They're popular enough that they have a following and people are paying attention to them. But it would be almost as if they treat it though as if like Lady Gaga started off in a group, like a girl group, like a Spice Girl, and then became an actress, like she kind of has become, you know? It's that's kind of the closest real equivalent that we do have. And I'm sure people are gonna scream, like, oh, what about Dolly Parton? No, she's more of a musician than anything. And then it's like, well, Taylor Swift hasn't done any acting, you know, but Beyonce's done some acting. So it's kind of like that, but Beyonce didn't become famous. More famous from acting. Like she's famous and internationally known because of her music. And whereas for Black Swan, Natalie Portman's basically just the lead of an off-Broadway play. It's not even a Broadway play. Like she's in a play of Swan Lake that is just taken too seriously by the people involved. You know, that's really all it is. And I was actually watching this again, like when it all started to click in my head, I was watching this movie very differently because, again, Tyler Durden furiously masturbating instead of fighting himself. But at the same time, this plays out like a snobby showgirls. It's a
Which
snobby showgirls.
your assessment of Fight Club raises the question of what if we got a horribly CGI'd sex scene between Natalie Portman and Mila Kunis?
They're just bodies blurring together with the dust or chemical brothers playing over them.
And then you get Mila Kunis saying, "I haven't been fucked like that since grade school."
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and in the alternate cut, it's I want to have your abortion, that kind of thing. But
We
yeah.
also never get Mila Kunis yelling at Natalie Portman saying, "You're shooting a gun at your imaginary friend."
That would be great. Just take all of like the Tyler Durden is now his imaginary friend scenes from Fight Club and put Mila Kunis in there. That would be great. I could just picture her with like a shaved head with the Oakleys on and the fur coat sitting in the hotel just going, ah, now you got it. Just
She could
doing the
pull
Bruce.
off like a girl Tyler Durden.
Oh, she absolutely could. Like that would be great. But yeah, but okay. So before we start actually really getting into this, so Natalie Portman wins this for Black Swan, best lead actress. Now, here's who she went, so she was going up against that year. Annette Bening in The Kids Are All Right, Nicole Kidman in something called Rabbit Hole, Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone, and
Winter's Bone's
Michelle
an
Williams.
excellent movie.
Yeah, and Michelle Williams in Blue Valentine. So you got two Academy darlings right there in Michelle and Jennifer, who are perpetual. Jennifer Lawrence is a perpetual winner, but they're always nominated. They're like the new Meryl
Now, that was Jennifer. I think Winter's Bone is like her first feature film, and she got nominated.
Streeps. Yeah, that's kind of like what kickstarted her. But then there's Nicole Kidman, who is at this point in 2010. She's not quite at the point where she's doing prestige stuff because she wants to get Oscars. Like, she's doing, just trying to actually do good performance at this point. Hence why she's doing whatever in a movie called Rabbit Hole, whatever the hell that is. But Annette Bening is firmly in the point of, according to Hollywood, older actress who needs her Oscar before she dies. Because in Hollywood, if you're over 40, you're basically dead. If you're a woman, you know? And Annette Bening, unfortunately, now is well past that. So she will ultimately probably get one, a career Oscar, as opposed to one for performance. But Natalie Portman is definitely deserving of the win, at least, because she doesn't so much play Natalie Portman as she plays this Nina. Like, she definitely changes herself for this role. She's very skinny. She's very ballerina-ass. She has a different voice, a different attitude. She's very non-Natalie Portman in this, except for the fact that she looks like her. You know, she's still got her, you know, she's still incredibly good-looking. She's gorgeous. But it is funny because in the whole of the movie, he's the only one outside of Darren Aronofsky who think this is probably an Oscar movie. She and Aronofsky are the only ones, because Mila Kunis is just here casually fucking around. Vincent Cassell is just fucking around, you know? Everyone else is just kind of fucking around, you know? That's all they're really doing.
Now, I will say, I'm happy the Oscars awarded horror movies.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a really horror thriller. It's a horror thriller, but... I mean, she turns into a fucking bird at one point, you know? There's a lot of, like, body horror, too, in this movie. Like, when her legs break and backwards, and she's walking around like a flamingo or like a bird, it's very odd, you know? But, but she at least deserved it. And Aronofsky basically did his best to make it real-life Perfect Blue with ballerinas. So where do we want to start?
All right, let's start with the scorned, out of their prime former star.
So we got Winona Ryder as Beth in Black Swan versus Rumi, is it?
Yep.
I think it's Rumi.
Which is Rika Matsumoto in the Japanese version, which is what I watched.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's what I watched, too. Yeah, in the... she plays Rumi, who is kind of a doughy former pop star. She is now Mima's assistant, basically. Not quite an agent. She's an agent assistant in the sense that she has some sort of say over what happens in her career or decisions that are made. But for the most part, she just gets her, like, coffee and make sure she gets to
like, she has a manager, but Rumi does play a part in it.
Yeah, she's like a very low-level manager. She's almost like a best friend that has somehow gotten elevated by the pop star to important status, you know? She's not from the record label or anything like that. She's somehow just kind of part of this team. But I don't know. I got to say, even though, obviously, by the way Perfect Blue plays out, Rumi has the much bigger role. You know, she is the villain in that movie, it turns out. But I got to tell you, like, Winona Ryder is, I think, she's a better look at that kind of character. She's a better version of it, simply because he has forced out this. And she is already kind of a broken, emotionally woman. And she gets hit by a goddamn truck, you know? And it destroys her legs.
That's what I'm torn about. Because I think Winona Ryder works well as, like, it's like the main character looks at her as, like, oh, God, that's what I could be and must avoid at all costs.
Yeah, especially after the accident, when she does see the horrible nature of her legs after that.
So, like, if I'm looking at it from a real-life perspective, Winona Ryder is more effective. When I am looking at it from a movie, I think Rumi's character is a lot more entertaining.
Well, yeah, because she's like almost an actual character. Like, Winona Ryder is given a lot with a little screen time.
Yeah.
And she's purposely a side motivational character, which is why the main characters are, you know, Natalie Portman, Mila Kunis, the mother, and Vincent Cassell. But Rumi is, she's definitely,
she has a presence. Good,
she does. She does have a presence, and she's a good character in the sense that she's what happens when stalkers from places you don't expect, you know, and it's she's
which
very...
we get a red herring stalker in Perfect Blue, but he ends up dead too.
He almost ends up being the actual killer too, because he almost gets Mima, you know, he almost gets her. But the thing is, and he's like being manipulated as a pawn by Rumi and the website and the real Mima, quote unquote, that's sending him emails telling him to do stuff. But yeah, it's my vote kind of has to go to Winona Ryder, simply because that person seems like they exist in that world. Like, there's always that person in that world. Whereas in, I don't know, obviously, enough about Japanese pop idol lifestyles to realize how much of the ex-idols are out for revenge.
But, so that is one of the other reasons I like Rumi. It's not the most realistic portrayal of someone who used to be in the world, fell out of importance, and I could imagine that leading to some serious stalking. And then this push, like, I like that she is pushed to the absolute limit of what that could be. And I think that makes her better horror or, like, psychological thriller, which is why I'm going with Rumi.
Yeah, I could see that. And also because of the level of importance of that character, too. Beth really is a side character. She's almost a nothing character in when it comes to the story.
But I do think her getting hit by, I think she's very important. Effective. And this is one of the hardest comparisons, because I like both of these movies a good amount.
Yeah, but, I mean, Beth is an important character. She's just not there for much time. And Winona, give her credit. Yeah, Winona gives it her all in the scene she is in, especially the one. Now, granted, it half becomes Natalie Portman at the end when she's just kind of slumped over in the hospital room with her legs up, and Natalie goes up to Nina goes up to her and starts putting her shit on the tray table, and she's like, "You stole my things," and she picks up the file and all that, but then she starts stabbing herself in the face, and it's like, oh, is this a hallucination or is this real? Or is Natalie Portman doing this to her? And the hallucination is that she's stabbing herself, because then it transforms into Natalie Portman stabbing herself and all that. It's kind of left up here a lot of stuff by Aronofsky, but it's very I don't know, it's very off-putting. It's not scary, it's just very unnerving. You're like, oh god, this is, oh, okay, you know, if I couldn't use my legs and that was my life, maybe that's what I'd be doing too, going full Harvey Dent, you know, I don't know. Just be cutting my face up. But yeah, I mean, I can agree with Rumi, you know, being the way
I'm okay with this one being kind of split, because it is really the perspective you take on it.
Yeah, and
think you're wrong to say you prefer either character.
Yeah, and it's their effectiveness in grid and their roles in their respective stories too. You know, they are different levels of character, you know. So all right, what's next?
All right, let's go to the outside factors. So for Perfect Blue, that being A, Rumi, B, manager, C, trying being in the limelight, the internet, the fake the account that's stalking her actual stalkers, and the stress of switching from her known career as a pop star to being an actor. And then for Natalie Portman being the stress of being perfect and the mother, the slimy dance coach, the older ballet star who she does not want to become, and the younger ballet star she's worried is going to take her spotlight before she even has it.
Yeah. My vote is flat out for Perfect Blue with this one, because Mima's room, which is the diary apparently of Mima, her daily life, it is her daily life. It's literally the events that she does every day, because Rumi is right next to her the whole time.
It makes the horror work so well, because you're this is creepy as fuck with whoever's doing this, because really it is not painted clear. You are not going to guess it's Rumi right away or anything
because it's the way they show everything. when you look back at it, Rumi very well could be just off screen. You know, she could be just walking with her. She just isn't the focus of whatever of the shot in the movie. So she could be right there because she is supposed to be Mimi's kind of like right-hand friend. But it could also be the stalker, because like the red herring, because he is that obsessed fan. And he could be watching her through a telephoto lens or whatever it ends up being, and he could be doing this. And we do see him in front of his computer a lot. We don't know if he's actually typing or anything, or like we don't see him actually putting entries in, but he is reading stuff and he's buying all of her magazines that she comes out when her photo shoot comes out. Like when her Playboy basically comes out, he's buying all of the issues so no one else can see her in such a state and all that. But the way that, yeah, the way that all of that affects Mima is great. Whereas everything in Black Swan, it's all internal. It's all internal with Natalie Portman pretty much for 90% of the time. And her mom needs a bigger role because
That's
she
what I was
plays
gonna
a
say. Black Swan could have stole this if her mom was more of like a what's it like Carrie's mom or something like that, like more over the top, more fanatical, more demanding on her. Now, what she is very much more like realistic, but it doesn't necessarily make for the most compelling pressure. And then again, the slimy dance director, like he's gross and like you don't like him, but you kind of see that he's purposely pushing her buttons, it seems like, to get her to. And again, it's more realistic pressure, but it doesn't, it's not as compelling pressure.
I also think that Vincent Cassell is I would there's I think there's an argument to be made about his character not entirely being the character that we see on screen. That he is a projection of Natalie Portman. And the way that he interacts with her very well could be part of her hallucinations. Because there are times, like the initial time when you think when she comes into his office and he's sitting there, he closes the door, you think he's going to pull the whole like I didn't take it out for air situation, kind of like this, you know? It's like you want the part, you got to work for it, you know what I mean, kind of thing. But he doesn't do that. He immediately like backs away and like is like, look, you're kind of a pussy. He's like, you're weak. I want somebody with a little bit of fight in them. That's the character I'm looking for. And then I think he does provoke her by kissing her because I think he's looking for her to hit him. He's looking for that fight in her, which she does give him. She does bite his lip. But I don't think he was ever intending to go past that. But they do kind of allude to the fact that he and Beth did like had something going on, but they don't pursue anything. And that's the only thing. Like he and Natalie Portman never have sex. The only other time they really interact in such a way is she kisses him at the actual performance, which you can also read as her being like super overconfident about what's happening and just kind of in the moment doing this to be like almost a power move on him at least. And he does kind of react in a way of like, well, where the hell did that come from? Almost as if nothing that we've seen before has actually happened. So he's just as shocked by her behavior as we are.
Which does bring up a good narrative on the effects of being too hard on yourself can have on you, which again is a lot more realistic and relatable to the everyday person than Perfect Blue. But it's not as compelling when you're watching it on screen.
Yeah, and especially given the fact that most of the everything involving Natalie Portman is it is we're in her head is what we are. There we don't we can't because of what's going on with her hallucinations, we can't trust what's going on
Which
externally.
brings up a another category that I think we should end on, which is the reliable narrator versus the unreliable narrator. We have a much more reliable narrator for Perfect Blue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it is like the third person narrative. It is the story that's like being
Which
told.
kind of makes the mind fucks better because it has to be so much more well written to make the mind fucks not feel like ass pulls.
But yeah, and I think this one should go to Perfect Blue simply because
I would agree.
it's a better way of doing it, you know.
That's it.
There.
The easiest way to do ass pulls is have your main character be not reliable, and then you can do a ton of twists, especially if your not reliable character is suffering with some form of psychosis.
Right. And but the thing is, I think that Black Swan does kind of suffer because it does exist in a post Fight Club Sixth Sense world. So it exists 10 years after those movies, or 11 really. So the split personality and the I see imaginary dead people twist has been done. And the way that they turn this is really just a matter of, oh, you're watching Mila Kunis get stabbed to death and her body stuffed in a bathroom. And then you see blood seeping out of the bathroom a little bit later. So Natalie Portman puts a towel over it. But then Mila Kunis shows up at the door and she's in a completely different costume than we've seen her in. And she's just a background dancer, which is pretty much what she's been this whole time. She's just been like a cool friend at one point. And it's very different because it's not pulling the rug out from under you in the sense that, holy shit, Bruce Willis has been dead this entire movie, or Brad Pitt has been a figment of Ed Norton's imagination this whole time. It's more of a, oh, nothing we've seen can be trusted. And it's not for a, I don't know, I don't want to say it's not for a good result, because the end result is fine, because it's meant to leave you questioning everything, but it doesn't really work when you think of logistics, like how she stabs herself, like breaks the mirror and stabs herself, but then she dances for like an hour, you know, and then all of a sudden she starts to bleed, and you're like, wait, what the hell's going on here? Like, does Mila Kunis even know that she's psychotic like this? Does she even know she's crazy? Like, she just, all she thinks is that she had a bad drug trip one night and thought they had sex, which is a funny ass scene when Mila Kunis calls her out in front of like everybody. She's like, oh my God, you had some crazy wet dream about me? Holy shit. She's like, was I good? It's funny the way she handles that.
That's good. Like, based on what we see of her character, which again can't really be trusted, you wouldn't, like, if Natalie Portman actually came on to her on like a drunken night out, you would believe that she would definitely do what Natalie Portman dreamed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And and in Perfect Blue, it's, I don't know, it's all happening to our main character, but it's done in such a way that we're experiencing it with her. Like, we don't know the secrets ahead of time.
Which it made it more compelling, because to do it without plot holes and make it compelling to do that type of twist is so difficult in writing, because like you watch it and you're like, oh, I can see what's happening, or oh, that doesn't make any sense that person does it. No, this makes sense, and there's good red herrings happening along the way that prevent you from jumping to the conclusion right away.
And when you think about the logistics of how it's going down in reality, with Rumi killing these people dressed up as Mima, it's funny because even though Rumi is bigger physically than Mima, she's a heavier girl. If you're passing by these things, you're just kind of walking through a parking garage, or you're walking wherever, you just kind of glance over, you're not going to be gauging weight, you know, you're not going to be gauging body type. You're going to be gauging what you see, which is a dance idol stabbing someone. And then you're like, oh, that's what Mima looks like. And you kind of just put two and two together and you go, oh, yeah, that might be her. But there are no witnesses in this thing. So it's really just funny to think about Rumi dressing up as her, almost with the failsafe of her maybe being seen by somebody. So she can then blame it on Mima and take her life, you know, whatever, you know, take her like roles and all that. But it's even funnier to think that Mima has this, like, Rumi has this break. She becomes Mima. And she is literally two people at once. And they even say when that personality takes over, she is that personality. So She, as far as we know, is Mima killing these people. And the way that you see that cinematically is this skipping ghost girl that is
Which
one
is
of the most,
utterly creepy.
it's utterly creepy and terrifying, man. It's like, holy crap, this is unnerving.
That I love Perfect Blue.
It is. I mean, like when I was watching it was all coming back to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this was pretty good. I do remember enjoying the hell out of this. But and of course the way that they if they're dead, the whole thing is being psychologically torturing to me, it's so much better. Simply because it's a mystery that's happening in real time that we're experiencing in real time. And we end up seeing that it was a story. Like we're being told a story. We can trust the narrator, we can trust our eyes. Everything was going down as we thought it was, and then at the end we're just confirmed that someone else was doing it. So this is a little bit of the twist. Whereas in Black Swan, the end you're like, well, what was real and what wasn't? You know, like you, it doesn't take away from the movie, but at the same time it does, because at the end you're like, well, what part of this was real? Like, well, how much of this was her actually doing these things, and how much of this was just her furiously masturbating?
Which brings us kind of to our next segment, which is what is more effective, the external consequences of Perfect Blue or the internal consequences of Black Swan? External consequences being people being murdered,
People
internal
losing their eyes and getting
consequences
murdered.
basically being maybe killing yourself, self-harm, with literally just breaking down.
Yeah, it's a mental break. And before we get into that, we'll do a quick beer check-in. So, how's your beer?
It is delicious. This is like my now it's more considerably more expensive than just going and getting a summer shandy or a porch rocker, but it is probably my favorite version of that kind of beer, being the lemon lager type of deal.
Nice,
So
nice.
good on Hokkaido.
Yeah, there you go. Done some good stuff. But yeah, my Stacy's mom, Evil Genius, is great. And I just cracked open my little goblet tasting. I'm gonna have a little goblet tasting version. It's like a flight version of this because it's 9% and I have to be able to function tomorrow. It's from Five Dimes Brewery, which is in Westwood, New Jersey, and it's More Good News. And it's a Belgian strong blah, Belgian style strong ale. And it's got this like blonde, like during the pigtails, she's kind of supposed to be like a Saint Pauli girl type, but she does kind of look like a little bit of a ballerina, so we'll go with that. She kind of looks vaguely like Natalie Portman if she was blonde, so whatever, you know. But it's good. It is really good. It's strong, but it's really good. All right, so external consequences of people actually getting cut up, their eyes gouged out, screwdrivers through the head, hammers to the temple, all that kind of stuff, versus maybe
Suicide.
someone kind of killing, well, maybe definitely a suicide, or maybe just an accidental suicide. It's more of an accidental self-manslaughter, is what it is. It's a self-manslaughter.
But definite self-harm.
Definitely self-harm. Yeah, that is unquestionably a thing. Self-harm, definitely. And maybe self-manslaughter. Like, I don't want to outright call it suicide because it's not. It's just more like self-manslaughter. She accidentally murders herself. But
Wait,
it's.
do we have to have this conversation? Come on, one movie has people getting their eyes stabbed out.
I mean, it's Perfect Blue. Simply for the fact that Black Swan doesn't have a body count other than one. It is. And it's not even one, it's like a possibly one. We don't even know if it's a one. The thing is, Black Swan needs a body count. Someone needs to die. Someone like real needs to die.
That they go for like the slow burn, and it's effective. But it's probably the reason that it got Oscar considerations and wins. But with me watching it, I'm like, I want some more actual horror.
Somebody needs to go down. Somebody like Beth needs to be murdered, as opposed to like she needs to have been pushed in front of that truck, as opposed to Natalie Portman just getting.
Or we at least need to think that she was pushed in front of the truck or something. Like, there needs to be like there need they don't necessarily have to be bodies at the end of the movie because of the unreliable narrator, but as the audience, we need to see stuff like that happening. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily actually happen, because like the way they the Beth thing, we could be like, oh, well, maybe she was pushed, or maybe she was actually just accidentally hit by a car, or maybe
Maybe she
she's
didn't.
totally fine and are we really don't know. Like, that's
Yeah.
fine, but we need that level of violence in there.
Yeah. Maybe she drunkenly just stumbled into the street and got popped by accident, you know? But the thing is, and it's funny because he came out of nowhere in Black Swan, the sudden Sebastian Stan,
Yeah.
who plays quote-unquote Jerry. I think he has a real name, but he does say it, but I don't care because Mila Kunis refers to him and his friend as Tom and Jerry. But he plays Jerry in this situation, and you can tell he's on drugs. They're all taking ecstasy at one point. They're all rolling. So, like, if anything, I would have wanted to see him end up as a casualty too, you know? And it's
Yeah.
there's we You don't necessarily have to get rid of the Mila Kunis, Natalie Portman sex scene because that's what's going to get people to see your movie. That, like, word of mouth about that gets out. But I mean, somebody's got to drop. Like, somebody else has to drop in this movie, whether it be the mother killing herself for attention or to, as you know, just like the psychological manipulation that she does with Natalie Portman. And it's, there's just not enough. There's a good amount of violence, but there's not enough to like really make the stakes be high enough in this movie. Like, maybe she is dangerous to others and not just furiously masturbating in her bed or somewhere else, you
That's
know?
like they do this, yeah, like they go for the psychological horror, and like the body horror and the psychological situations are intense, but there's never lives at stake.
No, yeah, at the whole time I never thought that anyone was going to be hurt up until Mila Kunis got stabbed, and I was like, okay. And in my head, I'm thinking maybe this is real, maybe this is not. But then it's like, oh, nothing happened to her at all. Oh, okay. this is not good. Like, she stabbed herself and then danced for another hour and a half. Like, I don't think so. You know, but. It is. It's all got to go. This one has to go to perfect blue because there's a real body count. There's real tragedies here. There's a real consequence to this. That, if you're being honest with yourself, I don't know how forgiving Japan is, people being convicted in the court of public opinion. But in the United, this happened in the United States, this person's career would be over. You know, there's only a certain amount of like sympathy we have for people like this before the internet takes over and basically turns this person into the victim, you know, and turns them into the perpetrator, the victim into the perpetrator. And it's like, oh, that would absolutely happen in this case. Now, granted, it is 97. The internet is a very new place, so it's not as toxic and awful as it is nowadays, but I think things will be a lot more difficult for Mima than the happy ending that we do get. And because when you think about it, everyone in her, you know, media team or her professional team is dead or in a mental institution.
Yeah. Which
So.
brings us nicely to our next comparison is the ending for our main characters, which this for me is the definitive win for Black Swan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, and this is just the cynical, cold-hearted, dead inside asshole that I am, the happy ending does not work for me. It just doesn't work. Like, I have been, like, someone's been fucking with me mentally this whole time, and you're just gonna show me a happily ever after? I don't think so. You know?
That's like, I get what they were going for, in that the whole purpose of Perfect Blue is being able to find yourself and live with yourself and not lose yourself in the personas you create to be around others.
Right.
And like, they tie it up in a pretty little bow, but I don't want the pretty little bow. I want some fucking conflict still.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's really, I don't know, it's not It's not bad, but it's just, I guess it's more just annoying than everything. Simply because I wanted a real body count. Like, I wanted somebody to really drop, you know? And we didn't get that. And it's
We don't
really,
even know if the ending we got is the actual ending.
right. Yeah, we don't even know that. Yeah, it's not fun, but it's also not like, I don't know, it's not bad. It's just annoying. It's really just annoying. And
Because they're going for a very like lucid experience in this, and I get that for the ending, but while I don't need the pretty little bow, I need some sort of bow.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so is that our final category?
Yes, it is.
All right. So I think Perfect Blue wins this one, right?
Yep, 4-1 per really we call it 3-1 and one tie.
All right. So, Mike, before we talk about what we're going to do next week, where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from, thanks to Spotify Podcast. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Happy Hour Films Podcast.
All right. So, Mike, do you happen to have the schedule? Because for
I
some
don't have it
reason,
pulled up, but I can pull it up.
yeah, for some reason, the file that I usually have is it's completely missing everything after last October. So, I don't know what's going on here.
Okay,
You're
so
going to have to send that back to me tonight. You're going to
it
have to
looks
send that
like
back to me tonight.
We're lighting things up a little bit next week, getting away from all this horror and getting into some animated bugs with Ants and A
Oh,
Bug's Life.
there you go. Answer the bug's life. That makes sense. Yeah. So, yeah. Next week we're gonna be dealing with, I believe, Woody Allen versus, is it Dave? Not Dave. Is it Dave Thomas? I think. Let's
Just
look
know I'm
it
going
up.
to vote against Woody Allen in literally everything.
Yeah. Oh, and it's also like Bug's Life. It's, oh, Dave Foley is his name. Yeah, but here's the thing. Ants, Woody Allen, Bug's Life, Kevin Spacey. So which one is it really? And but then again, Kevin Spacey is the villain. So I think on the
So
in
it
the.
looks like we're going to be voting for protagonist for A Bug's Life and villain for Ants.
Even though our protagonist and villain are both villains.
Yep.
Their respective names. But of course, yeah, so we got, yeah, so this will be an easy one. This will be Sharon Stone versus Julia Louis-Dreyfus. This will be Dan Aykroyd versus I don't know,
We got
Dennis Leary.
Sylvester Stallone.
Sylvester Stallone, Danny Glover, Gene Hackman. Oh my God, there's a lot of people in this. Oh good. Jennifer Lopez is in it. Can't wait. Oh, and she plays a character named Azteca. Oh, right. She's gonna be real Latinoed up. Just like Jennifer Lopez really is. She's a genuine person with genuine things. She's never been more real than anyone else in the world. Yeah, I hate this woman. I swear she's not I don't think she's a big character, but what screen time she will piss me off. I can guarantee it. So until next week when I gripe about an animated aunt Jennifer Lopez, I have been Ross Bacon.
McGuigan.
I'll see you guys next time. So long.